Hello and welcome to the Investors Chronicle Companies and Markets Show. I am John Heumann, editor of the Investors Chronicle, and joined today by Alex Newman. How are you, Alex?
I'm good, thanks, John. What does the sound different?
The sound sounds different because we had a nightmare yesterday. We recorded our podcast, we came upstairs, and it had disappeared from the server. So we had you and your pearls of wisdom on the oil industry, which we're going to talk about now. We had Algy talking about stock screens. Unfortunately, he doesn't work here until Friday. And we couldn't get the studio at any other time. So we're sitting in the little room at the back of the office, overlooking the Shard, recording this on our outdoor mic.
But we've done the dress rehearsal, though, so we should be on point.
Yeah, well, no pressure. I think we will, and yesterday was good. Let's hope this is good.
Let's hope.
If not, we'll just do it again.
Absolutely.
So we get it right. Okay, Alex, so basically, we've saved up three weeks worth of oil news. You had something in the magazine 3 weeks ago. Last week, I think we had the results from BP and Shell, which you covered in a news spotlight, and we have the cover feature this week in the wake of news about Iran. So, I mean, I think that's a good place to start. I mean, the Iran deal is the big news of the week, and obviously that has massive implications for oil.
Absolutely. So the big geopolitical story of the week, the Trump pulling the US out of the nuclear deal. This was, to a degree, baked into the oil price about a month ago with the appointment of John Bolton into Trump's foreign policy advisor team. When that happened, oil shot up because the expectation was that the nuclear deal wasn't going to be renewed. Still, it caused several dollars a barrel rise when it was announced.
Yes, that's about 77 when it was yesterday.
Yes, it was. Yeah, and it still is. Yeah. So $77 barrel Brent, which really, I mean, marks a remarkable comeback, sort of 40% up in the year, and that's off the doldrums at the beginning of 2016, when it was trading near enough a third of what it is today.
Indeed, amazing, right? It's not just Iran. I mean, yeah, let's talk about why the Iran or the Trump pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal has an impact on the oil price. But there are a number of other reasons why the oil price has been rising strongly this year.
So why pulling out the Iran deal has an impact is that the implication is that they're going to be economic sanctions placed on trading with Iran. That means it's going to be harder for the buyers of Iran's crude and gas to deal with them, lest they fall foul of the economic sheriff of the world. And that probably is going to result in several hundred thousand barrels a day coming off the market, a market which, as you imply there, and has been the case, is already tightening very, very, very quickly. That's a combination of factors. One, the OPEC cuts, which are now more than a year into effect, have tightened what was one of the sources of oversupply. Added to that, you've got Venezuela, which is doesn't attract the same headlines as Iran and the Middle East, but that's been in quite desperate and increasingly rapid social and economic collapse.
So the industry there is essentially grinding to a halt. It's just breaking.
Yeah, so the industry in Venezuela, it's been massively underfunded. So you get the quite rapid decline in their maturer fields. Also, the international oil companies, which have been based in Venezuela, now realizing that it's either too dangerous or too risky a place to base themselves. So that has reduced. That's been a large part of the fall in production over the last year. I think Venezuela currently producing slightly under 1.5 million barrels a day, and that's about 400,000 to 500,000 barrels below their current target.
So nothing to offset this then. I mean, we've heard a lot about shale in the US and the growth of that industry, but that's not able to plug this gap.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is plugging the gap to a degree, but perhaps not quite as forcefully as people had expected. Added to that, global demand's been pretty robust. That's holding up. Oil is, as a market, is fairly inelastic, and the general performance of the global economy, is tied to a pretty strong demand so far this year, particularly in Asia.
I mean, it's quite ironic actually that the oil price is doing what it's doing, given that Trump tweeted in the first piece you wrote a few weeks ago that one thing he was very unhappy with was the artificially very high price of oil. But all he's doing is stoking it higher.
Absolutely,
Is it going to go higher still? I mean, can we expect this situation to tighten further?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a daft move to rule out you know, where the oil price is potentially going to go. And some people have been talking about $100 barrel oil again. I mean, it's possible. It seems unlikely to me that it's good that that will be an average price anytime soon, as in it may spike to much higher than $77 a barrel, particularly if we have any more shocks. But it's unlikely, I think, to reach those levels. A lot would have to happen for it to get into the triple digits. But yeah, just to come back to the Trump tweet, which, you know, it feels like a million years ago, but only a couple of weeks ago, that was in relation to OPEC, which, you know, is a cartel. That's its job, to try and control the price of oil. They probably don't want it to go super, super high, because, you know, with increasing volatility, that's not, you know, that's not the ideal market for them to operate in either, even though, you know, paradoxically, they're making a lot more money at $100 oil, potentially.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, so you know, $77 oil, which is what we've got, and it's likely to stay at that sort of level for the foreseeable future. That's good for the industry, is it not?
Yeah, I mean, the industry is making a lot of money at the moment. If we start, you know, if we look at the, and that piece was followed by a piece we wrote on the profits, or Q1 profits, for Shell and BP. They're not generating in those results quite as much cash as the cash flow wasn't quite as strong as people have been expecting. But I mean, really, at these levels, they are making an awful lot of money. They've completely stripped back their cost base. They have, you know, they're not going gung ho on capital expenditure. Yeah, I mean, for the oil majors like BP, and I think particularly Shell, you know, they can afford to pay what Shell's dividend is, something like $16 billion a year. Add to that, they're promising $25 billion of share buybacks by the end of 2020. Yeah, I mean, that's the sign of a company making a lot of money.
Nice if you're an income seeker.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the main reason for holding shares in Shell.
We'll come back to Shell, because I think you know, the status of Shell as an income stock is kind of indicative of what you're saying about the industry as a whole in this week's feature. Going back to back a few weeks again to the first piece, there were some other beneficiaries of the oil price rise at the smaller end of the market for slightly different reasons.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, it's probably helpful to break down the market, or at least in London, into different groups. So of those companies with current production, it's really, really good, and particularly for, you know, certain companies like we flagged Premier Oil, EnQuest, Genel Energy, which have some quite a bit of debt on their balance sheet. This has a sort of multiplier effect. So not only are they making a lot of cash, they're also using that cash to rapidly delever their balance sheets. So if you have production, there's obviously been a premium for companies with cash generation now. Yeah, I mean, it's looking very, very good. Less good if you're, you know, you're reliant on these this market allowing you to fund a future project.
Well, see, that's quite interesting. That's why I talk about Shell. You mentioned Shell's capex, and I think you said that it wasn't, you know, exactly gangbusters. It's still spending a lot of money, but just not as, you know, as much as they perhaps have in the past. And actually, I think the implication is that they're not going to spend as much in the future.
Yeah.
And you can understand why that might be. You know, the oil is sort of a resource that in some respect is being phased out in certain applications. But with oil this high, surely that would attract investment into the future, into big projects that you know, will benefit from that high oil price.
Yeah. You'd think so. But I mean, I think increasingly, and I think we referenced a survey in the feature this week. This is borne out by the opinions of the large institutional fund managers, who are increasingly nervous about the longevity of the industry, and with it, the valuations and, you know, long-term income prospects of the market.
So we talked about, you know, so as you say, the sort of smaller producing oil companies. What you talk about in the feature is mainly those companies that are looking to bring assets on stream, bring projects on stream. And they're the ones that you suggest that may be struggling to find the finance they need to get these things off the ground.
Yeah, in some cases finance, sometimes it's willingness, sometimes it's having a joint venture partners who may have, who may have liquidity issues themselves. But yeah, I mean, I think those you know, some of the companies we highlight in, some of the projects we highlight in the piece, they're in, you know, for the investor who doesn't just want an income and who may want to see their return on their investment, you know, multiply in a shorter time period. There are some very interesting valuation propositions out there, i.e. companies with assets on their balance sheet, which are in no way being reflected in the share price currently.
So essentially what you're doing in this feature is looking at some of those projects and going kind of, you know, on a value investing shopping spree.
Yeah.
And actually running slide rule over some of these projects to see, you know, whether they stack up and the likelihood of them actually getting off the ground. So I mean, there's six of them, I think.
Yep.
You mentioned. Perhaps an example of something that you think is a good prospect, something where the project looked a little bit more shaky.
I'd caveat all of this by saying there's probably big risks involved in each of these projects, in that there are numerous obstacles to realising the potential of these assets. It's not just like, you know, with a property company where they're, you know, on their balance sheet there is a property which has been marked to, yeah, at a certain valuation, and that they can readily expect to achieve that valuation quickly. But that said, one company I do think is approaching a very interesting situation is Rockhopper Exploration, which, I mean, long-term, potentially long-suffering listeners and readers will remember.
Yes, the old Falkland story.
Yeah,
very exciting story that was too.
Yes, nearly 7 years ago, and it, you know, some of the excitement may have dimmed, understandably, because they've yet to develop this this enormous oil field. But yeah, the tide is starting to turn, and it's looking like some of the pieces are falling into place whereby they may be able to develop it. It's going to cost them about $1.5 billion in capital expenditure, together with Premier Oil, which is the majority operator of the field.
I mean, it's quite interesting that Premier Oil is involved here. It's one of the companies that we mentioned earlier that's benefiting, yeah, from this high oil price and being able to de-lever.
Yeah.
De-leverage itself. Presumably that situation potentially helps Premier, or would encourage them perhaps to go ahead with this thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the longer the oil stays at $77 a barrel, I'd say the greater the chance this is going to get developed. Because, not because Rockhopper is benefiting from it, but indirectly it is, because Premier Oil is making more and more cash.
Let's turn to one that you're less convinced will get the green light.
Yeah, so one I think is just the outlook is, despite, you know, elevated oil prices, that the outlook has turned slightly more negatively on is Ophir Energy. So they have this, this world-class liquefied natural gas asset, Fortuna, and in Equatorial Guinea. And they, last year, they had to sacrifice some of their stake in that project to build a consortium to hopefully take it forward to final investment decision. Final investment decision wasn't reached by the end of the year, nor was there an agreement from the Chinese banks, which they said were going to put the debt funding in place. There was then another debt funder, which supposedly was going to offer up support for the project, and that hasn't materialised either. As a result, you know, the shares have obviously drifted, and a couple of weeks ago, Ophir announced that they are going to be buying a package of quite mature cash-producing stakes in fields in Asia. It almost feels like a bit of a cop-out, and I'm also struggling to see how they're going to be able to both keep the capital they need to fund Fortuna at the same time as now being quite distracted by this other acquisition. To me, it points to, regardless of what the company has said and the assurances they've given, that Fortuna is still going to go ahead.
It feels like it could be a bit of a bet on rising prices.
It could be, yeah. And, you know, if that's proven, maybe they're able to do both and they'll come out a lot stronger as a result of it. But
is a bet, though.
That's
a bit of a gamble.
Indeed. As you know, as much of oil investing is.
Yes, as you can find out more of in your excellent Alpha report as well.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, tons in the last few weeks. Brilliant feature. Thank you, Alex. And obviously, as I say, you can go away and read more if you pick up the Oil and Gas Alpha report that was the first one we produced. So thank you very much, Alex.
Yeah, no worries, John.
That was excellent. Almost as good as yesterday.
Apologies for any cars in the background there, yeah.
I don't. just adds to the drama.
Drama.
Excellent. Thank you, Alex. Plenty more in the magazine this week. We have Jean Rosier's diary. As I said, we have algae stock screens. What I might do is do a proper stock screen podcast at some point to make up for the missing algae haul on this week's episode. Lots in the news section, personal finance and funds. So, thank you for listening. Thank you, Alex. And pick up the magazine. All good news agents. Oil's grand finale. Finding value as the oil age comes to an end. Speak soon.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.